I'm going to go to you on the next topic as well, because we want to have a look at the two cases that the government have intervened in, or the way has been cleared by Cabinet today for Ireland to intervene in two cases in front of the International Court of Justice. Hugh, if you'd give a potted explanation of what happened today.
Yeah, so this is a decision taken by Cabinet to intervene in two cases before the International Criminal Court, including the most high-profile case at the moment, which is South Africa's case alleging genocide by Israel in Gaza. The government had previously signaled its intention to do this. Obviously, Israel strongly opposes this case and has been very, very critical of the International Court of Justice over this matter. But what legally intervening means is that Ireland will be asking the ICJ to broaden its interpretation of what constitutes genocide under the UN Genocide Convention, because the government is concerned that at the moment it's a very narrow interpretation. And that kind of creates this culture of impunity that effectively allows Israel to do what it's been doing over the last year or so in Gaza. And then the second case is Gambia's case against Myanmar under the same convention, and that relates to the treatment of the Rohingya people in Myanmar, formerly Burma. This has been widely welcomed by a lot of people who've been calling for Ireland to intervene in this, Sinn Féin leader Mary McDonald, but also human rights groups as well. Several NGOs have been out today saying that this is a very welcome step by Ireland. But as to what effect it has in terms of bringing about a ceasefire, I'm not so sure.
Okay. Paul Lawless, has Aintu had time to consider this, and what's Aintu's position, if so?
That just broke today. But look, we welcome the intervention by government in relation to it. I think it's important that we act in conjunction with the International Court of Justice. And it is important that we do consider the broadening of the interpretation of genocide to include, obviously, intent and impact of actions as a result of harm to civilians, population. And we know that there's been, tens of thousands of innocent civilians who have lost their lives as a result of this conflict. And I think it's, we do support the intervention that was announced today by the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach.
Barry Ward, the Ireland is not intervening, it says, on either side, but it is seeking to have the definition of genocide broadened sufficiently to cover what's going on in Gaza at the moment. So it wouldn't seem to be on Israel's side.
No, it isn't. And I mean, that's a technical thing, because there's an intervention by Ireland in that case, along with a number of other countries that have intervened as well. The difficulty with this case is, yes, the definition of genocide should be broadened to cover what's happening in Gaza. I agree with that. But the reality is that on the 26th of January, the 28th of March, the 24th of May, on each occasion, orders were made by the International Court of Justice against Israel in relation to taking effective measures to prevent the destruction and ensure the preservation of evidence related to allegations of acts within the scope of the Genocide Convention in Gaza. They haven't done any of those things. There are no sanctions for them for not doing them. There is no action by the international community. Now, the United States doesn't sign up to a lot of these things and doesn't accept them, but the reality is that as an international community, if we have this court that's been put together under the auspices of the UN, which has the power to implement the Genocide Conventions, is doing so in terms of making findings and preliminary opinions and moving towards clear determinations, what's the point if nobody in the international community is willing to stand behind that and actually implement those things?
And is Ireland in making this intervention because it's obliged to do so under its signing up to the Genocide Conventions, or is it taking a stand and doing this?
Well, it's both. I mean, Ireland, in fairness, despite the criticism from some parties within Ireland, Ireland has been a very clear voice in relation to what's happening in Gaza. Leo Varadkar was the first Western leader to call out Israel for what it's doing. Ireland has built together a coalition of other European states, including countries like Belgium, Malta, Spain, Norway, to come together to take a very particular, clear view that what's happening in Gaza is unacceptable, is genocidal, and must stop. Now, the problem is that there are other international actors like the United States who will not do that for whatever political reasons, even within the European Union, countries like Germany and Austria, which obviously have an historical link with Israel and the people who were the subject of the Holocaust as well. And their historical context makes it very difficult to say that. But Ireland has been really clear in this. And I'm actually very proud of the leadership that Ireland has shown within the Western world, if I can call it that, to call out Israel and to take action against it. So, yes, we've done that. But also, in the context of the opinions set out by the International Court of Justice, we have an obligation also under the Geneva Conventions, to which we are signatory, to take what action we can. Now, that doesn't mean military intervention or anything like that that we are not capable of doing, nor would we want to. But in terms of other things, and the Occupied Territories Bill is one of the measures that the government is now free to use and to implement. I've heard Micheál Martin on a number of occasions committing to bringing that in and instructing the Department of Foreign Affairs to fix the issues within that so that it can be implemented by the next government in short order. That has to happen too. So it's both, Cullum. We have taken a stand and we're now implementing that through legal instruments.
On the Myanmar case, I mean, what diplomatic avenues are opened? As you said, you know, Germany and Austria, and I suppose the rationale for Hungary and Czechia within the European Union for opposing Ireland's stance is perhaps a little less clear. But Germany and Austria have a particular context for the action they take here. It wouldn't apply in the case of Myanmar. So what diplomatic action could Ireland take in order to advance its opinion as to what has happened in Myanmar and to hold people account on that front?
Well, the case that was brought by the Gambia was originally brought in November 2019. So this is not a new case. What happened against the Rohingya minority at the Tatmadaw, at the hands of the military authorities in Myanmar, is not news to us either. This has been something that the international community has known about for years. I welcome the Gambia's case. I welcome the fact that Ireland is joining in with that in the way that we can. The reality is we don't have an embassy there and they don't have an embassy here or anything like that. But we are a significant player within the diplomatic international community. People listen to what Ireland has to say because we don't have an axe to grind. We're not a big industrial power. We're not a big military power. And so people are less threatened by Ireland. And we have an extraordinary record of peacekeeping, of our military non-alignment. And so when we speak, be it at the UNGA or even in the Security Council when we were there, people actually listen to what we have to say because we can be honest brokers in this space.
All right. Paul Lawless, the news that came out today that Saudi Arabia is to host the World Cup in 2034. Do you have a view on that?
Well, I do. Like many people, particularly in, I play a lot of soccer at home in Mayo. And
you're being modest now. What about Derby County?
Well, yeah, look, I've played across a few different countries. But, you know, I do have concerns, to be quite honest with you. You know, obviously the situation in the Qatar World Cup around human violations there, particularly around migrant workers earning, you know, very low wages. There are significant amount of labour injuries and fatalities as well. You know, certain labourers went missing in relation to the construction works for that World Cup. And I know in the subsequent aftermath that many of those migrants were not paid or in some cases fully paid and were essentially sent home and returned to their countries without the ability to access justice. So, you know, I do have concerns in relation to it. And I do think that the international community and the Western world need to really scrutinise FIFA because they've refused to really provide any analysis or investigation in relation to what happened in Qatar. And, you know, will this happen again in Saudi Arabia? It's certainly something that I know a lot of people have deep concerns and I share those concerns, to be quite honest with you. So I really hope that the Irish government can use its seat at the UN Security Council to work with our international counterparts to hold FIFA to account and ensure that the things that we saw during the Qatar World Cup don't continue to happen again in this instance.
Yeah, our term in the Security Council has ended, but we are indeed in the General Assembly and we do play a role in other UN groups. Hugh O'Connell, it's kind of, I suppose, the old saw of look at the terms of reference first when any decision is being made. Saudi agreed, you know, FIFA agreed with Saudi to limit the scope of topics that would be taken into consideration, excluding things like women's rights, trade union rights, forced evictions, LGBT rights and freedom of expression. I mean, is it any surprise they passed with flying colours?
No, it isn't. I mean, this is the new reality now. Qatar has set the benchmark and that World Cup went ahead. There was a lot of concern expressed beforehand. There was a lot of discussion during that tournament on broadcasters and in the media about the human rights issues that existed in that country. But for all intents and purposes, it was an extremely successful World Cup. It was probably the best World Cup final, certainly in my lifetime. And at the end of it all, probably the greatest footballer that we've ever witnessed gets to lift the trophy as the ultimate kind of, you know, topping cherry on top of the cake of an extraordinary career, Lionel Messi. So, you know, this is the new norm now because, you know, Qatar has happened and now Saudi Arabia will happen in 2034. You know, as long as football remains as popular a sport as it is and attracts millions, if not billions, of viewers every week, FIFA will be able to do these things and no one will stop them.
Barry Ward?
There's probably some reality to the last comment Hugh made there, but whatever credibility FIFA had is now spent. You don't have to like a government or agree with everything it does, but there are particular examples in Qatar and Saudi Arabia where these are essentially rogue states that are allowed to continue to do things because they have lots of money. And that's not the way it should be. It's not the way sport should operate. And you can have just as good a World Cup final in another country. It doesn't have to be in a country where there are massive human rights abuses, denial of women's rights, murder, but sponsored by the state in foreign countries, all kinds of things that are absolutely deplorable.
Okay. All right, we're back in a minute.